Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, so this is prose, so we're just going to read the text and then go on to the translation and Srila Prabhupada's purport. Yatra Vavavira Varta Uttana Parihi Paramo Bhagavata Smatkula Devata Charanara Vindo Dakam Iti Yamanusa Vanam Ut Krishyamana Bhagavad Bhakti Yogena Dridam Klidyamananta Ridaya Okancha Aviva Samilita Lochana Yugala Kudmala Vigalaita Mala Vashva Kalaya Bivya Jamana Roma Pulaka Kulako Dunapi Paramadarena Shirasabi Bharti. So in translation, Dhruva Maharaj, the famous son of Maharaj Uttanapada, is known as the most exalted devotee of the Supreme Lord because of his firm determination in executing devotional service. Knowing that the sacred Ganges water washes the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu, Dhruva Maharaj, situated on his own planet, to this very day accepts that water on his head with great devotion. Because he constantly thinks of Krishna very devoutly within the core of his heart, he is overcome with ecstatic anxiety. Tears flow from his half-open eyes, and eruptions appear on his entire body. So, purport by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. When a person is firmly fixed in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is described as vira-vrata, fully determined. Such a devotee increases his ecstasy in devotional service more and more. Thus, as soon as he remembers Lord Vishnu, his eyes fill with tears. This is a symptom of a maha-bhagavata. Dhruva Maharaj maintained himself in that devotional ecstasy, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also gave us a practical example of transcendental ecstasy when he lived at Jagannath Puri. His pastimes there are fully narrated in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, Om Maganat Timidandasha Gunanjana Shlakaya Chakshurun Meritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, does anyone know what the word Dhruva means in Sanskrit? No. Nobody knows. Too bad. What? Permanent. Yeah, it's like permanent fix. Very good. It means permanent fix. So Dhruva is called permanent or fixed because he was fixed in something we call his determination. Of course, we mentioned that in previous classes, and that Bhagavad Gita talks about, Vyavasayatmika Buddhiya. That means one point of determination. And it's interesting, I mean, just like Srila Prabhupada would comment on that particular verse, and he would quote Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura's commentary on the Vyavasayatmika Buddhiya verse in the Bhagavad Gita. It's the second chapter. And he would say that one should be firmly determined to carry out the order of the spiritual master. So he would equate the two. Okay. So Dhruva Maharaj, let's tell a little bit about Dhruva Maharaj and his determination. Because his determination in the beginning was not due to pure devotional service. It was mixed. Just like you have different types of devotional service. You have karma, mishra, bhakti, and you have jnana, mishra, bhakti. So karma, mishra, bhakti means that our bhakti is mixed with some desire to enjoy this world. or to have a position in this world, right? And jnana mishra bhakti means our desire is mixed with a desire to get liberated, get out of this world, get free from pain. So that's jnana mishra bhakti. And sometimes jnana mishra bhakti can be understood to mean that one's desire is mixed just with a desire to get knowledge. You know, that's also the direct meaning, jnana mishra bhakti. Mishra means like mixed. So Dhruva Maharaj, his devotional service was karma mishra bhakti in the beginning, because it was mixed with a desire. So what happened? Let's go tell a little bit of the history. Once upon a time, there was this king who was mentioned here, Uttanapada. And Uttanapada had two wives, Suruchi and Suniti. And it's interesting, they really had a lot of animosity towards each other. The first wife was Suniti. And Suniti was doing all right with Uttanapada until Uttanapada married Suruchi. And of course, even the name means something. Does anyone know what Suruchi means? It's like good taste. You know, imagine your wife's name. What's your name? Good taste. And Niti means like fixed in rules and regulations. You know, so you had one dharmic wife. Okay, so let's take the names of what they mean. One wife who was dharmic, that's Suniti. And then Suruchi, one wife who was gorgeous, but she wasn't so dharmic. She used to twist Uttanapada around her pinky. You have that name here? A little finger. You ever hear that? The twist of her. And Uttanapada, he just became bewildered by her beauty. He became an obedient servant. So much so that he neglected what's called the rule of primogeniture. Anyone's heard of that rule before? No. That's a big word for all you. You can learn it and you'll impress people. Just like I was at the interfaith thing and I was using some words that I considered ordinary and people didn't understand them in our little group. So I had to tone down my English. So primogeniture means the rule that if you're a king, you have a son, and you have two sons or three sons, the oldest son, primogeniture, that what is generated, primo means first, okay? Like primary, prime, this is the same word in English. So the first son is the one who's supposed to be king, if he is qualified. If he's not qualified, then forget it. Just send him to the farm. So if he's qualified, he should be the king. Like in the case of Dhritarashtra, he wasn't qualified. He wasn't the oldest either. But he wasn't qualified because he was blind. So in the case of, let's say, Dhruva. So Dhruva was the oldest son of Maharaj Uttanapada, and Dhruva's mother was Suniti. And he had a son, he had a brother, I'm sorry, Uttama, who is the son of Suruchi. And so Suruchi said to King Uttanapada, this is before Dhruva got insulted. She said to King Uttanapada that my son should be the king, even though he's younger, not that Dhruva. And so King Uttanapada basically said, yes, sir, or yes, ma'am. Can you imagine that? This is violating like what's considered to be an important dharmic principle. Nowadays, of course, people want to relativize dharmic principles. Anything goes. You know, anything's all right. Basically, you know, I'm not going to get into details, but I get letters from disciples saying, why don't you approve a particular activity? Because everybody does it. And I said, you got to have what we call a bottom line. You know, you understand bottom line? You got to have somewhere where you stop and you say, this is right and this is wrong. But this is not politically correct now to say that certain things are right and certain things are wrong, right? If you say certain things are wrong, people will say, whoa, you're such a mean guru. I've had that happen, you know. I've lost faith in you because you're saying that there are certain absolutes. And I say, well, Prabhupada said, you know, what can I do? You know, I'm Prabhupada's servant. And the Vedas say, and the Manusmriti says, and all those other things, but they say, no. The people really, the main thing is in their hearts. Even if they're smoking marijuana, in their hearts they love Krishna. And I just say, well, phew, it's a new movement to me. It's not the Hare Krishna movement that I joined 50 years ago. So, you know, Prabhupada was very strong about dharmic points. But, you know, now even the churches, they're opening up and doing things that are dharmic. Even, you know, apart from the meat eating, they're allowing so many things. I'm not going to get into specifics because I may offend someone in class. So, getting back to the point, is that Uttanapada, he just did something adharmic. And he made Suruchi his chief wife rather than Suniti. You see, a similar thing happened with Dasarath, right? And Kaikeyi. That because she was so attractive, youngest, and she also had saved him in a battle. There's a whole story about that in the Ramayana. That she was able to just control him. She just by her tears. Tears are a very good weapon. Tears, the ultimate weapon, the tears. It's the astra. There's Brahmastra and Tirastra. So, be careful. You know, you should have protection. You should have a shield whenever there's tears. So anyway, so I don't want to offend the ladies. So Kaikeyi was able to control Dasarath with her tears. In the same way, Suruchi was able to control Uttanapada. And then finally it came to the point that poor little Dhruva was like 5 years old. He wanted to sit on his father's lap, Uttanapada's lap. So, you know, that's normal, isn't it? Like a kid comes up to the parent and says, you know, please give me a hug or let me sit on the lap. It's like that's happening right here. Can you imagine if, like, one of the ladies says, no, you can't have your son sit on your lap. Only my son gets in. And so Uttanapada, being so controlled, was so cruel that he just, like, put Dhruva down on the ground, basically. Could you imagine how... That's so traumatic for a child. People talk about post-traumatic stress, right? It's called PTSD. Technical. That means when someone's had something heavy done to them, like they've gone to war, their whole psychology changes. You see, the people who've gone to Afghanistan or Iraq, even later on, if they hear the sound of a thunderbolt, it's similar to the sound of a bullet or a gun. They just dive to the ground. That's called PTSD. So poor Dhruva Maharaj had PTSD because he was thrown to the ground. And his stepmother was so cruel, she said, the only way you can sit on your father's lap is if you take birth as my son. And the only way you're going to do that is you pray to Lord Vishnu. At least she had some spiritual life there. She had some intelligence. And then Dhruva, of course, became completely traumatized, went to his mother, Suniti, and he said that to his mother, and his mother said, well, she's right. You know, the only way you can sit on your father's lap because of the situation right now is if you take shelter of Lord Vishnu. And so Dhruva Maharaj, you know, said, where is Lord Vishnu? And his mother was not so philosophical about the whole thing, because if someone asked me, where is Lord Vishnu, I'd say, well, on the altar, in your heart. I wouldn't say, you know, in Tavayuni or something like that. You know, in the jungle. It's like we just went to visit a devotee in Nandi and Harishari, and his house is all the way in the jungle. So we drove there and I said, this is in the jungle. It's horrible. You know, I wouldn't say that Krishna's there. Krishna is there because he's a devotee, but I would basically keep someone at home and say, well, Krishna's on the altar, or Krishna's in the heart, and some nice things. But his mother did not understand philosophy that well. So she said, I have heard that Vishnu is in the forest. Because generally when people wanted to find Vishnu, they would go Aranya Tena Gantavyam. That means they would go to the forest, Aranya. Aranya means the forest. And there's Aranyakas, that means the sages who live in the forest. Generally, they would do that. You wouldn't find the sages with their ashrams in the middle of Suva. Or in the middle of, you know, generally, the renowned sages, they would have ashram outside. Even Vasishtha Muni, when he trained up Lord Ram and his brothers, that ashram was outside of the capital of Ayodhya. You understand? It was outside the city. It was in the forest. So, Dhruva Maharaj heard this, and he was thinking about it. He was lying down next to his mother, sleeping at night, and then he got up in the middle of the night, and he started to head for the forest. And he went to the forest, and he was very determined, because of this traumatic experience he had had, and because of his kshatriya nature, which is the mode of passion. So he went to the forest, and basically, Narada Muni appeared before him and said, Dhruva, go back home, little boy. This is not appropriate. When you get older and you retire, then you can engage in spiritual life. And, of course, this is generally the advice that our parents give us or people give us, that now is the time to get married and engage in economic development. And then when you get older, you can chant. In other words, we give our youth to Maya and our old age to Krishna. Not a very good proposal, right? It's better, as Prahlad Maharaj said, Komara Chiret Pragyo Dharmam Bhagavatam Iha Durlabham Manasya Janma Tadapdhruva Marjanam, that we should take up Krishna consciousness from the very beginning of life. So Dhruva Maharaj, he was very determined. No, I'm going to worship Lord Vishnu. And Narada Muni was astounded to see the determination of Dhruva Maharaj. He actually praised how amazing the kshatriyas are. But that determination was not pure. Remember that. It was karma mijra bhakti, which I mentioned in the beginning. It was mixed with a material desire. So Dhruva Maharaj, with his material desire to become great, to have a great kingdom, greater than that of Lord Brahma, he began to perform austerities. There's a description in the Bhagavatam how he reduced his bodily necessities. You know, first he was just eating leaves from the tree. Then after that, he would take like a leaf once a month, and then water once a month, and then just breathing, and then breathing once a month, and then he stopped the breathing, and really it caused a disturbance in the universe. When a yogi can identify, what he does is actually, it's interesting, he identifies himself with the total material energy, and he can actually manipulate the material energy. That's a real yogi. A yogi can step down in the earth and cause the earth to split or create planets. Like Viswamitra Muni, he was able to create a whole heavenly planetary system just by his yogic powers. I mean, this is a real yogi. Not like these people you have today. They have some beard and smoke ganja, and they make believe they're yogis. But the real yogi can do that. I mean, hatha yogi, that is. Of course, Prabhupada said the real miracle is changing people's consciousness, not simply doing some mystical or magical tricks, which some yogis can do. So, what happened is that Dhruva Maharaj was affecting the whole universe. The demigods complained, and ultimately Lord Brahma and the demigods went to Lord Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu appeared before Dhruva Maharaj as this incarnation called Prishni Garbha. And Dhruva Maharaj was so much absorbed in ecstasy that he couldn't speak upon seeing the Lord. The Lord finally touched him on the head with his conch, the conch shell, and Dhruva Maharaj began to pray in a very wonderful way. And one of the first things he said was a verse from the Hari Bhakti Shudaya, which says that I was looking for some pieces of broken glass, and now I have found a wonderful gem or diamond. In other words, Dhruva Maharaj had given up his material desires at that time. But he started, this is the whole point I'm making, he started with material desires, which all of us do start with. And Krishna talks about those material desires in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Chatur Vidha Prajanti Mam. People come to him for various reasons. They come because they want money. What is it? Om Jai Jagadisha Hari Swami Jai Jagadisha. You know that song? No. And they go to Satyanarayan Katha. Your people do Satyanarayan Katha here? We should do that, make money. So, no, we don't do that. So they go to the Lord for different things. That is, they want money, wealth, or material enjoyment. You put it in a bigger context. Like they want power, position, let me win the election. Just like the President of the United States, he had a little Hanuman deity he was worshiping. Did you know that? He carried it with him, and he won the election. So he wanted to become president, so Hanuman helped him become president. People want wealth, or people are just curious, that's called inquisitive, or people are in distress. You know, we get that all the time. People come to the temple, I'm in so much distress, my husband doesn't like me, or what are other things? Oh, I'm sick, you know, I have some disease. People come in distress, or people come because they want knowledge. The four different reasons people come to Krishna consciousness. And I was talking to the devotees about this the other day, that in the 1960s and 70s, when we came to the movement, generally people came to the movement because they were looking for the truth, wanting knowledge. That was the main thing. I mean, in America, we didn't come because we wanted wealth, because we had wealth. We didn't come because we were in distress, because mainly we were young kids. Young people are not so much in distress, right? It's when you get older, you get distressed more. The body just doesn't cooperate with you anymore. Isn't it? The knees hurt, the head hurts, the heart hurts. your relatives don't like you anymore because you're not giving them money. I mean, it's one thing, you know. Anyway, so we weren't just inquisitive. We came because we wanted knowledge. In other words, we wanted to know God. And therefore, there was a lot of enthusiasm in those early days. And it became transformed into the enthusiasm to preach and spread Krishna consciousness, save the world. Anyway, that was the whole psychology. And of course, Prabhupada encouraged that. You know, save the world. He would even tell devotees, you're going to be the next president of the United States. It was my godbrother Balavanta, he told that too. And he would encourage, you know, double the book distribution, save the world. And so it was like an army. We were like Prabhupada's army. We were so enthusiastic, no one could stop us. Even we had things going on like devotees kidnapping other devotees from temples to do book distribution. But Srila Gurudev did that. You know, because he wanted to preach so well, so much, that he would go to the temple and see the brahmachari just sitting in the temple. And he'd say, brahmacharis are not meant to be in the temple. Because in Fiji, we don't have any brahmacharis, so they're an extinct species. You know, just like that. You have a list of all the species that no longer exist. Like dinosaurs and tyrannosaurus rexes and everything. So one day in National Geographic, you'll have brahmacharis listed there. And they'll dig up the fossils or some brahmacharya. So anyway, the sannyasi found a brahmachari in the temple. This is what Srila Gurudev did. They found a brahmachari in the temple. They had preached him in the middle of the night to say, how can you stay here? You're just wasting your human form of life. You should be with sannyasis and travel and save the world. And so the next morning, as I mentioned many times before, the temple president will wake up and find the brahmachari is gone. And he'd be there having to do all the service of the deities in the morning because everybody would be gone. We don't have that problem now. So there was that mood. The whole thing was there's that mood and tense, what's called utsahan. You know, utsahan means enthusiasm. Intense mood, saving the world, dedication to the mission and everything like that. And basically that comes, of course it comes from Prabhupada's association, but it also comes from one's understanding of coming to Krishna consciousness because he wants to know God. He wants to know the truth. Like that's that whole search for the truth. And of course, in the Chaturshloki verse, it says that, Etavareva gigyaksha, tatva gigyaksha natmana, ang vaya vyaptire kabyam, yachat sarvatra sarvada. I think some of you may know that verse. That one should look for the truth everywhere. At all times, in all places, in all circles. That's the fourth of the Chaturshloki verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So there was that desire. So, therefore, Krishna says, those who are looking for knowledge or those who are wise are considered the highest. When Krishna talks about that in the Gita, this is Bhagavad Gita, knowledge. So, the point I'm making is that some of us may have not come for that particular reason. We came for other reasons. But in order to keep that enthusiasm, then one has to focus on that goal. And if you don't have any goals, then your life will not be vyavasayatmika buddhi. It will not be determined or one-pointed. And if you don't, as they say in strategic planning, if you fail to plan, you're planning to fail. Right? You heard this before? If you fail to plan, you're planning to fail. So you can't plan without a goal, without a mission. So most of us don't have any mission. You know, why? If we ask, you know, why are you here? Why did you join the Hare Krishna movement? It may be, you know, I'm not saying that they're criticizing it. It may be because I just like the food. Or just like, whatever, the chanting. I was brought up in the movement, right? I mean, there's so many different reasons why we may be here. So what we have to transform that, the point I'm making, into some goal orientation. Like Dhruva Maharaj was goal oriented. It wasn't pure, but still he was focused. So we have to find some goals in Krishna consciousness that will focus us. I mean, you may not be desiring, I want to be a pure devotee, I want to go back to Godhead, or whatever. You may have some other desire. But you have to dovetail your desire in Krishna consciousness. I guess we should be specific. You may have a desire to be famous. That's all right. Or to have people appreciate you. So then you become a preacher. And in that way, even though your desire is not pure in the beginning, or you have a desire to make a lot of money. And so you go to Krishna and say, please give me a lot of money and I'll build a temple for you. That's all right. But at least that's something according to your psychophysical nature. That's why Prabhupada emphasized Varnashram. Dhruva Maharaj was a Kshatriya. Naturally, he was influenced by passion. You can't change that. Even Arjuna, being a Kshatriya and a pure devotee, Krishna used a passionate argument to get him to fight. What was that passionate argument that Krishna used? He used two of them in the Bhagavad Gita. Does anyone remember? No. He said, if you don't fight, it'll be embarrassing for you. People will make fun of you. That's a passionate argument. You understand? Because a Brahmin, if you say people will make fun of you, you'll say, okay, let him do it. Hare Krishna. But a Kshatriya, because he's in the mode of passion, he wants people to appreciate him. He walks around. You can see what a Kshatriya looks like. He walks around. You know, he wears jewelry. You know, the men. We're talking about the men now. They wear this jewelry and a crown. You know, imagine one day if I came in with a crown on my head. And, you know, a ring on each finger. Right, what else? And a Rolex watch. You know what a Rolex watch is? I only have a Casio, a cheap watch. You know, some sannyasis have Rolexes, right? So all I can afford was a Casio. You know, just an electronic watch. And so, that's Kshatriya. You know, respect me. Or if, let's say, if every time someone did Guru Puja, I'd say, wow, this is great. I enjoy it, like everything. The Kshatriya would like that. Whereas a Brahmana, you know, if he's getting the Guru Puja, he thinks, they're serving my spiritual master. You know, this is, I'm offering with my guru. He's not thinking, this is wonderful, you know. I need my daily fix of Guru Pujas. Like a drug addict, he would take his drugs every day. So that's passion. So when a Kshatriya would wake up in the morning, you know how they would wake a Kshatriya up in the morning? Does anyone know? How? What?
With songs
about him. You know, oh great, oh great Sanatan. You are so wonderful. You conquered all your enemies. You're the filter king of the world. You know. So that's how they would wake a Kshatriya up. It's amazing, isn't it? Or like, you're the best doctor in Fiji. And you'd wake up, oh, I feel really good today. You wake a Vaishya up by selling him, you're going to make so much money today. Oh, great. You wake a Brahmana up, it's time to chant. Oh, Hare Krishna. And you wake a Shudra up, how would you wake a Shudra up? You throw some water on him and hit him with a stick. I got to talk to telling the devotees yesterday, when I was a temple commander in the early days, or temple president, I would throw water on the devotees to wake them up for Mangal Arati. And sometimes I'd drag them into the shower and turn the shower on. So, anyway, so the point is that that Arjuna, he was enthused by this whole reputation thing. For one who has been honored, what? What did Krishna say? Dishonor is worse than death. That's a Kshatriya argument. The Vaishya argument is, for one who has money, poverty is worse than death. So he gave him a So Krishna was very much aware of the principle of enthusiasm, how to encourage people. You understand? It's called motivation. When I was in the university, I studied motivation. So people in different modes of nature are motivated by different things. And Shudra, you just say, come to the temple, you can eat nicely. And so, he comes to the temple. So we have to learn how to preach like that too. But as far as ourselves are concerned, we have to learn to motivate ourselves in that way. You know, what really inspires you in Krishna consciousness? What aspect of Krishna consciousness? Of course, Prabhupada did say that preaching is like a Kshatriya thing. And Prabhupada encouraged competition, which is like a Kshatriya thing too. Like, who can distribute the most books? Who can make the most, open the most temples? Who can do this? Who can do that? And Prabhupada even said he would stay at those temples where they distributed the most books. You know, a lot of competition was there. So, for ourselves, what really inspires you in Krishna consciousness? Does it inspire you to make deity dresses? Wonderful. Does it inspire you to distribute books? Wonderful. Does it inspire you to go to people's homes, teach them how to cook? Wonderful. There's something for everybody. Or does it inspire you to make money and give money to spread the movement? Wonderful. It's not that one is better than the other. Arjuna was inspired to fight or protect. You know, not just fight for sake of fighting, but fight for the sake of Krishna. So wonderful. It's all wonderful if it's dovetailed in Krishna's service. And then whatever temporary desire you have, like Dhruva Maharaj had that desire, will be eradicated by following the process of bhakti. Dhruva Maharaj became a great pure devotee by following the process of bhakti. Same thing with us. So just inspire yourself with some activity for Krishna. And of course, then, ultimately, everyone's meant to be inspired by the chanting of the holy names. Okay, so any questions or comments? We have about 4 more minutes or 5 more minutes for class. So you should be like Dhruva. Dhruva means fixed. You understand? Steady, fixed. Because what inspires you? I mean, I can tell you, what inspires me is I want to please Prabhupada. I'm not inspired by liberation. It doesn't really attract me at all. I'm not, you know, money, no. Unless it's used for Krishna. Eating, you know, that's already God. Eating, sleeping, no, sleeping doesn't inspire me. So the thing that inspires me is just like, Prabhupada has given me a mission, I want to please Prabhupada, I want to help people. So that's what inspires me, and that's what I think of, and that gives me enthusiasm. You know, when I see all of you, you inspire me because I want to help you become Krishna conscious. So that's my source of inspiration, but it's not everybody's source of inspiration. Yeah, so, Jambavan, you had a question? Well, let me explain. Prabhupada even allowed the auditorium in our Bombay temple to be rented to Mayavadis. You know, this is interesting. I mean, you know, other people ask the same question of me. The Prabhupada, as long as they rent it, you know, they're renting it. So in the same way, the people who are using it are connected to the people who paid for the whole hall. Right? And also these people are coming and getting some prasadam. I had an interesting discussion last night with one of my godbrothers, not about exactly the same issue, but a similar issue. This godbrother is doing chanting programs with famous chanters. Like there's someone named Krishnadas, I don't know if you've heard of him before. He's one of the most famous chanters in the world. He's not a devotee. And he's doing chanting programs, and one may say, well, would Prabhupada approve it? He's chanting, you know, big programs with the Maya. But using this particular person who's not a devotee, he's able to speak to audiences. Like he was telling me, he had an audience of 25,000 people in one place. 25,000 people. So sometimes we have to not contaminate our philosophy or ourselves or our minds or anything like that, but utilize people who may not be, let's say, as focused or even interested in Krishna consciousness in order to propagate our Krishna consciousness movement. It's a fine line. It's a fine line. I mean, and the devotees who are doing that sort of what we call bridge preaching have to be very careful. It's not that we want to cross the line and become something else. At the same time, unless, if we appear in people's minds to be too closed, you know, small-minded or closed, this is their judgment, of course, then they will consider us to be irrelevant, I mean, basically something that's not even useful, fanatic group. You know, so we have to be very careful. Like if we were to say to these yoga people, and you know, I'm not in favor of doing hatha yoga and chanting soham, soham. I mentioned that the other day in class. Soham, soham, aham. I'm not in favor of that. But at the same time, we allow that for different preaching strategic reasons. You know, to engage people in Krishna consciousness. So people will take us, not see us as a bunch of fanatics. Because if people perceive us as a bunch of Hare Krishna fanatics, you know, it's enough that we're vegetarians. That freaks enough people out, right? Like people go home to their parents and say, I'm not going to eat what you cook anymore, Mom. And whew, that creates enough problems. And it's enough we don't drink liquor. At least I don't drink liquor. I don't know about the rest of you. I've heard about devotees sometimes, you know. Isn't it? Well, we don't drink. I don't drink liquor. I don't. I'm not going to ask the rest of you who drinks liquor here. But it's enough that we're so much different like that. So we don't want to give people the impression that, you know, we're off there in outer space. So we have to be careful. We have to be careful. Like I mean, when I first joined the movement, I did give people that impression. I went home to see my mother, and I wouldn't even look at my mother's face. I would just look at her feet. And basically I thought, here's Maya Devi. I was a brahmachari. Anyway, here's Maya Devi. I'm not going to speak. And my mother would say, look at me. I said, I can't. And my mother would say, listen to me. Because I always kept my bead bag in my hand. I'd always chant Hare Krishna. So, why are you chanting? Listen to me. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. So basically she thought, you know, I've lost my son. And then my father at one point had me interviewed by a psychiatrist. And I went home to visit my father. And he said, I want you to meet one of my friends. You know, Dr. Jekyll or something like that. You know that story, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So I wanted to meet my friend, doctor. Oh, I have to go somewhere right now. So he said to me. So he left me in his room with the psychiatrist. And obviously, you know, it didn't take much brains to figure out the psychiatrist was giving me an examination to see if I was sane. And so he said, how do you feel? I said, great. Do you ever get depressed? No, I can't, Hare Krishna, and I'm always happy. Do you love your parents? Yes, because they're spirit souls. So somehow or other I convinced the psychiatrist I wasn't crazy. But, you know, in those days we were pretty fanatic. So of course, you don't want to go the other way and just engage in all sorts of nonsense. You know, just like, I'll become a Sharma or something like that, you know, one of these. You understand? Like, going to these pundits here. And I'll do all, you know, now Maharaj is going to do all sorts of blessing ceremonies for you. You don't want to go to that extent. But there's somewhere in between. So, yeah, it's a fine line. The point you're making is good, but it's a fine line. It requires some discrimination. I think we have to greet the deities now, right? Okay. Thank you for your attention. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Prabhupada.